You're listening to episode 64 of the Mad Chatters podcast, December 16th, 2015.
Most everyone's mad here.
This is the Mad Chatters podcast, your very important date with the happenings at Walt Disney World and around the Disney universe. My name is Derek, and as always, I am joined by my fellow host. Bless it.
Co-host.
My fellow hosts, known as Matthew.
Diwanawanga.
And I don't know what that means.
It's a Star Wars language. I don't know. I just looked up something real quick to be as fancy as Jeremy is.
And Jeremy.
Me so fancy, yeah?
Oh, yeah. There you go. That's right. On this episode, we are talking about all things Star Wars. It's going to seem very random because it is, but we still feel like we have to talk about it because it's very exciting. But before that, I want to talk to you, Matt, for a second because you visited the parks this week, and I want to know if you felt like, while you were there, that it was the last time you would ever step foot in a Disney park without having gone through a metal detector first.
Well, no and yes. And yes and no. And I'll tell you why in a minute. But I can see why they're bringing that to the parks. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's just a rumor, just speculation for now. But word on the street is that not only are metal detectors coming to both coasts, but toy guns aren't going to be sold in the parks anymore. No masks anymore with your costumes. At least for people over age 14. I don't know why that makes a difference, but I do. But also, like, are you going to check? Are you 15? Oh, mask off.
Well, maybe they just look like a grown adult.
Well, and I've said for years that the security at Walt Disney World really is just like pageantry. It's just all for
pageantry. That's good.
For show.
It's all for show. Because, like, if you really wanted to bring something in that you weren't supposed to bring in, you would find a way to do so. You're not just going to, like, leave it in the top of your book bag for the security guard to find
it. It's
like, they don't
stupid.
Frisk you. Or, yeah. But there has been some incidents recently. I remember a couple years ago, and maybe you all remember this, there was a news story about a man who accidentally left his gun on Dinosaur.
Yes, I remember that.
It was like tucked into his pants. I guess he had a handgun, and during the jolting around of that ride, it fell out. And then when he got off the ride, the next kid like sat down and was like, is this supposed to be here? and the man claimed he didn't know he wasn't supposed to bring it in. And I don't know if he got in trouble. But then just the other night, this was posted on WFTV Channel 9 in Orlando, their news story. And I'm just going to read the story how it is because without any commentary.
Oh, boy. Right?
A Miami lawyer was arrested Friday afternoon after trying to bring a gun into the Magic Kingdom Park, the Orange County Sheriff's Office said. A Walt Disney World security guard was searching bags outside the park when she noticed a bulge in a man's pants.
No.
Andrew Garrison, 36, joked that the bulge was part of his anatomy. But deputies said it was actually a snub-nosed revolver loaded with five hollow-point bullets. Gerson walked away, and the security guard located a sheriff's deputy. The deputy followed Gerson from a distance, and when he noticed he was being followed, he started to run, according to the report. That's when the deputy pointed a gun at Gerson, commanding him to stop. Gerson then admitted to the deputy that he was armed and dropped to his knees, the report said. He did the right thing, the Orange County Captain Angelo Naives said.
What?
He offered
Naives? He did the right thing. Okay.
He offered the commands, and the subject did obey and surrender to the deputy.
The sheriff pulled a gun on him in front of other guests?
I guess so. That's what it seems like. But here's the thing. He did not get arrested for bringing the gun in. He had a concealed carry permit, but officials said the permit expired 10 years ago. So what he got in trouble for was not having the gun, but having the concealed carry permit expired. So this is a really hairy issue. I mean, I'm not a gun person, but like this is definitely going to be a hairy issue for Walt Disney World, especially in Florida where you can have concealed carry permits.
Well, you're right. I mean, the guy on Dinosaur, he really didn't even have to try that hard to get the gun into the park because they don't frisk you. They just check bags. And so if the gun is on your person, I mean, it's no problem. So, which kind of surprises me that someone that went out of their way to say, excuse me, what is that bulge? Is that a weapon?
What is that? I'm glad Miss Naives told him he did the right thing. Exactly. She always thinks people are doing the right thing.
Well, we'll definitely keep our listeners updated if that rumor becomes truth. Yes. But as of now, no metal detectors in sight yet.
But do you remember recently Universal Studios put some metal detectors? I guess, were they actually detectors or were they just wands?
They were wands, and they were at individual attractions, which is strange.
Yeah, it was like in front of the Hulk and those things.
That would be Universal's way of doing it. That just sounds like them.
It's like, I don't care if you shoot someone over there in that restaurant, but you better not do it on this roller coaster.
Yeah, they were like trying to prevent people from being in like cell phones and sunglasses.
Well, that's understandable. Yeah. I guess they had the issues with the roller coasters and people, all their dang lockers everywhere you got to purchase for every attraction.
But doesn't it just feel like, I mean, it is a sign of the times, but isn't it just like a sad feeling that like nowhere is sacred anymore, nowhere is safe?
No.
Every aspect of our life now is...
For instance...
In fear.
For instance, yesterday, while strolling through the Magic Kingdom, I stumbled across some very interesting theming in the pavement. You know, in Storybook Circus, you have the hoof marks and the peanuts. Well, in Adventureland now, you have open razor blades. And they actually are not part of the theming. I'm being completely facetious. They were...
I followed.
5 or 6 loose razor blades. Like, don't think the kind you shave with unless you put them in an actual safety razor or something. They're, like, just, you know, trapezoidal-shaped razors just laying on the ground.
Like, for, like, box cutting, those kind of razors.
Yeah, but not in, like, a holder of any kind. I'm just talking about the razors. Yeah, like, just
That's
laying there.
That's so weird.
Soon as we came out of the tunnel... where the bathrooms are from Frontierland to Adventureland over there near the Swiss Family Robinson. And I told an employee, or cast member, sorry, I told a cast member that they were there, and he obviously looked concerned. And
went over. I put those there. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. He went over there and stood, you know, over top of them and called someone over there. I was like, you know, you don't want to be like paranoid or anything, but why would someone, unless it was like a maintenance person that dropped them or cleaning, why would anybody be bringing those kind of razor blades into a theme park?
That's so random.
Yeah.
Maybe they were left over from the Halloween party, because you know how like they put razor blades in candy?
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
You know how people do that.
Yes.
That's a mess. Razor blades in Adventureland.
Yeah.
That's going to be the name of our first CD, guys, when we form our rock band.
Anyway, enough of current events. Let's go ahead and kick off this episode with this week's very merry Chapmas moment.
This is Roald Howard and Mickey Mouse, everybody. And I just wanted to say, Happy Holidays!
This week, we're going to do one of our favorite segments, which is the good, the bad, and the ugly. But this time, for the good, the bad, and the ugly, we're just going to do Christmas at the parks in general. Anything and everything Christmas-related at Walt Disney World. And as always, we're going to start with our good, and I'll send it over to Jeremy. Let's hear from you first.
Okay, this was very difficult for me.
Mm-hmm. Choosing just one, you mean?
Yes, choosing just one good thing. But after reflecting on it, I'm going to go with the obvious. And the reason why I feel like it's the obvious is because a lot of Disneyland people recently on the Disney Twitterverse were in the Magic Kingdom because there was apparently a good flight deal a couple months ago from coast to coast, and a lot of people took advantage of it. I'm sad I didn't, but anyways. Mm-hmm. So one of the things I kept noticing, kind of a thread amongst all the Instagram posts and the castle posts, Twitter post, is that they all loved the castle being lit up the way it is in the Magic Kingdom. And it just kind of made me pause and be like, wow, you know, sometimes after seeing it for the last gosh, 7-8 years over and over again, it kind of becomes a little jaded. You kind of forget how beautiful that castle is when it's all lit up with the ice lights and things. So my good is Cinderella's castle at Christmas time.
That's a good point, because Disneyland Sleeping Beauty Castle just does like garland ornaments.
No, yeah, lights. It doesn't get that overhaul with the whole freeze kind of a feel. Mm. So, and plus Cinderella Castle compared to Sleeping Beauty Castle, as we mentioned before, is so much more majestic and iconic as far as the way it looks and overwhelms you. And then when you add the ice features to it, it really makes it look extra beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Elsa. Well, keeping in the theme of decorations, I'm going to head over to Animal Kingdom Lodge and just say that their lobby during Christmas is one of the most spectacular, most well-photographed, like the most photographable, what's the word?
Photogenic?
Photogenic, yes. Places in Walt Disney World or anywhere. I don't get tired of seeing shots of that lobby. I mean, anytime. But that Christmas tree is gorgeous.
I just love that resort in general all year long, and I think it's beautiful. And then that Christmas tree, it's just like icing on the cake. It really looks amazing.
It is. I think one of the reasons I like it is because I love that rustic Christmas look. Like, I love when people bring out the brown in the trunk rather than, like, golds and gaudy silvers and stuff. And that lodge really does that well, because it's a lodge, so of course it's going to be more rustic feeling. But it's got the nice garland all around the room, and then that tree is just like the icon that you draw your eyes to the second you walk in. Mm. Oh,
You would love Dolly Parton's other Christmas movie, Smoky Mountain Christmas, because it has that rustic kind of feel to it. You should check it out.
Oh, okay.
That's what makes it. My good is garland, and specifically...
That's a good one.
All garland. No, I love the garland on Main Street, and I'm trying to think of all the places it is, but I know one place it is for sure, and that is along the rail on the back end of the train station on Main Street. And the reason I like it is because it is so period appropriate. It's, you know, evergreen with bows, but there's like fruit in it. You know, like oranges and apples and like little bundles of fruit. And I don't know. That seems to be something they would do in the turn of the century, decorating things, hanging fruit on things. But I like that. I don't like much of the decorations there in the town square of Magic Kingdom for Christmas. And I'll get to that in a minute. But that's one highlight.
Okay, I was going to ask you something specific about decorations, but I'll wait till after Bad and Ugly in case you're going to mention it. But let's move on to bad. Jeremy, what you got?
Again, nearly impossible, because as gaudy as everything is, it just wouldn't feel like Christmas to me without it. But I did have one suggestion. And that is, my bad is the cookies at the Mickey's Very Merry Christmas Party. Now, the cookies are snickerdoodles, and they are good. They're not overdone. They still have that soft baked feel to them, which I love in a cookie. I don't like a hard cookie at all. But I feel like maybe they could step up the variety. Instead of just having snickerdoodles, they could maybe have some chocolate chip, or actually I would just be happy with chocolate chip if you want to know the truth. But you could throw in some oatmeal raisin or something. People like that, I guess. But
shortbread, that's Christmassy.
Yeah, or gingerbread.
Gingerbread.
Yeah. Because they offer you the hot chocolate, or you can have the apple cider, which is just apple juice or whatever, or the water. But, you know, you only get one choice of cookies.
Ooh, water. I paid so much money for this party.
You know, some of us be diabetic, I guess. I don't know. Yeah. But, so step up the cookie game a little bit,
yeah.
Disney.
Well, and I thought Jeremy was going to say it, but I'll say it. Remember, bad means we don't hate it. It's just it could be improved upon.
Yeah.
Which takes me to the Once Upon a Christmas Time parade. And ever since I first saw these, I was confused. And then once I finally understood, I'm like, I don't think that works. And it's the quote unquote ice skaters in the parade who are very obviously on rollerblades, not on ice skates, because they're in the middle of Main Street. Yeah. And I don't think it quite translates as ice skaters, because then later you've got the people on skis. And they've got poles and everything, and it looks like skis. Like, I think that works. but the rollerblading doesn't work. So I feel like it would be really cool if they could have a float with a sheet of ice on it and they skated around the float.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how practical that sounds dangerous. That is. Well, but the rollerblade, I'm like, why are there rollerblading dancers? That's weird. Oh, they're ice skating. No.
And I think that it's also dangerous being on rollerblades because with those train tracks, like, people have a hard enough time walking with the train tracks. I can't imagine.
Yeah.
I can attest.
Rollerblading. Yeah. Derek being one of them.
My gosh. I trip, especially Disneyland. I trip on those things all the time.
There's that video that's been going around for the last few months about the guy walking at Disney parks and tripping on the railroad tracks all over. Have you seen that? What? Oh,
oh wait, maybe I did. Like, it was staged.
Yeah.
I saw that.
But I was like, Derek, that's so you.
I know,
like,
seriously. Anyway, those rollerbladers, I like the thought. Let's just make it more obvious that they're ice skating.
Yeah, and they really kind of lost a lot of that because if I remember right, that's right before the Anna and Elsa part. Is that correct?
Maybe. I can't remember exactly.
Yeah, but and that used to be Chip and Dale, and it used to look like a ski lodge kind of a thing. So you kind of got the skiers and the ice skaters all together. But then when they put Anna and Elsa on there and evicted Chip and Dale, it turned into the store. What's his name?
Wandering Oakens.
Boinkins. Lloyd.
Oakens.
Oakens.
Boinkins.
Big summer blowout, whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Trading post, something like that.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. That's right.
They trading something.
Yeah.
They trading something.
I don't know what that means.
Oh. All right, Matt.
My bad is the music loop, and a particular music loop. It's the Christmas music loop. From Everywhere, because I think they made one in the 70s, and they use it everywhere. At the Ticket and Transportation Center, on Main Street, on Hollywood Boulevard. And I just don't... It just... It's not good. I mean, it's just old. It sounds like it's from the 70s. You know, it's got like a music box slash harpsichord kind of thing playing the melodies to all the songs. And it's... I don't know. You know, on Main Street, I think... Disneyland Paris's Main Street Christmas loop is spectacular with like the brass quintet, I guess, playing just like standard carols, like a Salvation Army style band, you know, playing out in the street. That's good. But this one I don't like. And maybe it's just the fact that they use it everywhere. And I don't feel like anywhere has a specific Christmassy loop except, you know, Animal Kingdom Lodge, which is why we love it so much.
I would say Animal Kingdom, the park as well, has a great Christmas music loop. I got a little... touched
the Buena Vista Street Christmas loop, obviously new, is fantastic. It's that, you know, turns, well, 20s jazzy type, relaxing, feels so good. But I know what you mean. Just this week I noticed while listening to the Epcot background loop that so many of the tracks were exactly the same as the Main Street loop.
Yeah,
I'm like, this is not okay.
I just don't, it just sounds old.
Yeah. All right, it brings us to the ugly.
Okay, my ugly, and again, I don't hate these totally, but I think I prefer what used to be there, and that is the wreaths on Main Street. I don't really care for them. I liked them when they were strung across Main Street all the way, and they changed that when they had the new Festival of Fantasy Parade, because I guess Maleficent, it would catch on her, and she would light the park on fire, and that's never a good thing. But, I don't know. The new, they just look weird to me. Maybe it's the hangers. I think the hangers just kind of look funny to me, the way they're kind of just like a coat rack kind of a thing, yeah, sticking out there. And then the candles, they could have done a little better with the candles. They look kind of ugly.
Inside the wreaths, you mean?
Yeah, yeah.
I actually never liked when they strung the garland across all of Main Street. It just blocks the castle. I thought it was so hideous.
Back in the day, before YouTube playlists and stuff were a thing, and I could just log on to YouTube and watch someone wandering around Walt Disney World, there were the illegal, maybe not illegal, certainly like bootleg, like home videos that people sold of like the Disney World attractions, wandering the Magic Kingdom, wandering Epcot. And we're talking like somebody just made them in there, you know, with a camera, put them on DVD, slapped a little white label and wrote on them, and you could buy them on eBay, you know, every once in a while when they would show up because they were trying to stay out of the spotlight. And for whatever reason, they did all their videotaping at Christmas. And so, like, during Wishes, it was just all I could see was this garland and the big wreath there. I was like, why would they do that?
Yeah. And even if it didn't block the castle, I just wasn't a fan. It was so much green all down Main Street.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Not much.
Anyway.
Well, on you too.
Okay. Well, my choice for ugly Christmas stuff is one of Mickey and Minnie's outfits. They meet in lots of outfits, like during some parades and during some shows and stuff. He's wearing a jacket or a top hat or a bow tie, lots of Christmas colors. It looks great. But I think it's at Animal Kingdom, and maybe at specific times they meet. He's wearing red pants and she's wearing a red skirt, and then they have green sweaters on, just a sweater, and they have white snowflakes across the neck, almost like a necklace, like a string of snowflakes, and that's all it is. It's like an ugly Christmas sweater without trying to be. It is hideous. Like, no hats, no scarves. And then you go to Magic Kingdom and he has a nice blazer on with a hat and a tie and he's all sparkly. I'm like, those don't even compare. It's just, it's awful.
It's Magic Kingdom Mickey and Animal Kingdom Mickey. He didn't pack his nice clothes to go on safari.
I mean, that's true. Okay, that's true. I don't know what they could do instead. But if I met him in that, I'd be like, oh, never mind. I'll come back later once you've changed.
Okay, I'll tell you what. You go change. I'll go ride Everest, and I'll come back and see you.
Anyway.
My ugly are the toy soldiers.
No!
The town square on Main Street. Not talking about during the parade.
Oh.
I don't care. During the parade, they're okay. I don't like them as the decoration, like, around the Christmas tree there in Town Square.
They look just like they do in the parade.
But I don't like them in their place. See, I like them in the parade marching, doing their thing. I don't like them as decoration. Because they're static, and they're not, I mean, I don't know, they're not really time period specific. I feel like it kind of takes away from that. Once it's the music and these soldiers on Main Street just make Main Street not feel like Main Street during the Christmas season. If they were gone, I don't know. I don't like them.
But in the parade, you're fine with them in the parade.
Yeah, I like them in the parade. Okay. I like their presence. I just don't like them as the decoration around Town Square with, I think there's like candy canes around. It's just all too, I don't even know how to describe it. It's not appealing to my eye. Everything's so vertical. You got the soldiers and the candy canes and then the big tree and the flagpole. It's everything in Town Square is just like, it's not pleasing to the eye.
Okay, I can maybe see that. Yeah. But during the parade, like, that almost was my good. I love the way those soldiers look as they march down.
For instance, during fall, like September to Halloween, you know, you have the scarecrows out there with their candy apples and various other treats. They're very horizontal, you know. They're spread out holding their stuff, and they got the haystacks and stuff, and there's no big tree there in the middle. But those soldiers, it's just all too vertical. Maybe it's flashback, some kind of subconscious math class geometry problem.
But in the parade, you got to admit, though, there's something just about the overwhelming nature of all those soldiers marching.
Mm-hmm. And playing instruments,
like,
right?
And playing instruments, yeah. And you're just,
I like that.
Wow. And I started thinking about it. I was like, the amount of staff and personnel they must have to put on this parade each Christmas party is tremendous. There's probably over 100 cast members easily in that parade.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think overall we'd say Christmas at Walt Disney World is more good than it is bad or ugly. At least that's what I would say. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. We're going to try out a new segment now. We're calling Disney Hashtags. And I'm going to throw it over to Jeremy to let him explain this and tell us about the hashtag we're talking about today.
Apparently, the kids are hip and cool with the Twitter these days. Mm-hmm. And so a hashtag is what we used to call the number sign. And by hashtagging something, meaning that you can categorize it.
I didn't mean explain the concept of a hashtag.
Oh, okay. Well, this
some of our older listeners might not know.
True.
That's true. True.
In fact, some of our younger listeners might not know because I don't think this is a thing anymore. But go ahead.
Please continue.
Today, our hashtag is add a word, ruin a Disney attraction.
Mm. So we're going to add a word and in doing so, ruin a Disney attraction.
To an existing attraction's name.
Yes. I thought that was pretty self-explanatory, but okay.
I was kidding. It was.
So we'll just kind of go around in circles, and if any explanation is needed, then we'll explain as well. So, Derek, why don't you start us?
Okay. Dumbo the Flying Elephant Poop.
Hmm.
Look out.
Splat.
Dodge, duck, dip, dive, and dodge.
Yeah, if any of our listeners have ever seen At Midnight, I kind of stole this idea from At Midnight. So there you go.
No.
Shout out to Chris Hardwick.
That's right. That's right. Who shouted out to us.
Yeah. Mm.
At Hollywood Studios, on select nights, you can ride the Christian Rock and Roller Coaster.
Oh, no.
Featuring all your favorites, which I don't know.
I can't name any. Lecrae.
That's hip hop.
Oh, okay. I'm out.
Newsboys, weren't they a thing once?
It's true.
Yeah, you know, Newsboys, Skillet, I don't know.
Is that Audio Adrenaline?
Yeah. That would be a terrible ride.
Ugh.
Get me off.
Okay, my turn. Ready?
Mm-hmm.
Rafiki's Planet Watch Tower Society. This is where Rafiki has joined the Jehovah Witnesses, and the whole attraction is just knocking on doors.
Mm. Oh.
I like it.
That's good.
This one's pretty self-explanatory. Mad teabagging party.
Yeah. You know that's what that mouse is doing in there.
Oh. Oh, my.
Keeping with that theme. Butt Pirates of the Caribbean.
What's a butt pirate?
They be out for your booty, matey. Show them your larboard side.
We just turned into a seventh grade locker room all of a sudden.
Swab the poop deck.
All right, mine. Backsplash Mountain. It's the whole attraction is just like HGTV.
Oh, that's nice. I can't put this on the show.
Let's hear it first.
Walt Disney, One Man's Wet Dream.
Oh, no.
I love it. I say keep it. I like it.
Just leave it there. Let's just...
Okay. Ooh. Okay, let me do another one as well. The American Airlines Adventure. That's it.
Really?
That's it. Just take a tour of the history of the American Airlines.
This one may be on the way to us next year after November 2016. That is the Trump Tower of Terror. That one, courtesy of my wife, Jessica. She gave me that one.
That's good.
Oh, good job, Jessica. Mine is, it's a small world view, meaning as you visit the different races and ethnicities, someone yells profanity at them as they go through.
Nice.
Oh.
So it's a small-minded world.
Well, better way to learn a world view, yeah. that'd be like a small-minded, it's a small-minded world after all.
Enchanted Tales with Alexander Graham Bell.
Woo. The Enchanted Tiki Bar Room. Although that doesn't sound too bad.
That sounds up your alley. On the same note, Peter Pan's Beer Flight.
Hey, if you're into that.
Does anybody have any more? I have so many more. I won't say them all. It's all right.
Use them up.
Do you have good ones, though?
I mean, some are not. I mean, I'm a little biased, but...
none's going to beat Wet Dream, but...
The Hall of Fraternity Presidents. Mm. Discovery Island Happy Trails. It's kind of like something that would have been in Wonders of Life Pavilion, but anyway. Haunted Playboy Mansion.
Oh, mm-hmm, that's mm-hmm. good.
That sounds like something Busch Gardens would do. Like Hollow Scream.
I don't know how to respond to that. Well, this one we know from experience. Journey into Your Imagination. Well, I don't know from experience, but Matt does.
Like a literal ruined.
Yeah. The Mini Bathroom Adventures of Winnie the Pooh.
What?
Affection C-section. I'll quit there. But we should let some of our listeners send us their ideas on Twitter. Let's get this thing going. Add a word, ruin an attraction.
Hashtag.
That's right.
I thought about Space Bar Mountain.
That's good. Like on a computer, like a space bar.
Yeah.
Mm.
I get it.
Paying tribute to that little fellow that's part of all of our lives every day.
Mm. Let's just shut this down. Disney podcasters, we would not be doing our due diligence if we did not talk about something that almost everyone in the planet is talking about this week, and that is the release of Star Wars Episode 7, The Force Awakens. So on this week's episode, we're going to talk about all of the hype that's going on right now revolving around this movie, and obviously in turn around the Disney company, since they have now purchased Lucasfilm and are releasing this film under their studio. So let's just get to it. Let's talk about some of the things we're excited about this week with Star Wars and what the news is saying and what people are saying. Are you guys seeing it is the first question.
I'm seeing it Thursday.
Ooh, what time?
I think it's 7:30.
Nice.
Yeah, it's so good at 7:30.
Yeah, I've heard that's the best time to see it.
Yeah.
Are you going to see it in IMAX or 3D or anything special?
I'm going to see it in Avon Park. Which means on a... Actually, we have a pretty decent theater. It's not like state-of-the-art and very big, but the screen, they got, you know, nice audio and things. It'll be good enough to watch it on.
Mm. I'm seeing it at 7 that night. I tried to get IMAX tickets, but they were gone. And then when they did release some later, they'd opened up more showings at like 1:15 and 4:15. And I'm like, I'm good with 7 without IMAX. It's okay.
Mm. Afternoon or in the morning?
No. 4:15 in the morning.
Oh, my gosh.
On Friday morning. Yeah.
How? Oh, that's
well,
a mess.
Well, because there's only one IMAX theater in Nashville. There's one just outside Nashville, but the one in Nashville is, you know, it's a hot ticket item. And so when they sold out the 7 and the 9:30 or whatever it was.
People will be going to work so tired yet so happy at the same
time.
That's
probably true, yeah.
Maybe, unless it stinks.
Well, we'll see. They had the big world premiere this week in L.A., so some people already have an opinion. I just don't really care to hear what that opinion is yet.
No, me neither.
So, what about you, Jeremy?
I had tickets to see it on Thursday night at 7:30. However, I sold them because my work Christmas party is that evening. And I decided I should go to that. So I'll try to see it either later that weekend or maybe on Monday.
Okay.
So I will be avoiding the internet all weekend long.
Yeah, I was just about to advise that. That's probably smart. But I am super excited. I've already done my marathon of the three good movies worth watching. I kind of skipped the other three. I'm ready to go. Oh, gosh, I'm excited.
There's a lot of places that are doing marathons in the theater leading up to the movie. And I saw the one, they're starting at 1 a.m. with Phantom Menace and showing them all in order.
The
trilogy till The Force Awakens at 7 p.m. the next night. Which I think is smart because you're able then to skip 1, 2, and 3. And then the fourth one, the New Hope, starts at like 10 a.m. So then you could just show up at 10 a.m. and watch.
Because I was going to say, I think you should watch them, much like reading the Bible, in the canonical order in which they come. Because if you if you watch the first three, 4, 5, and 6, the first three first, and then the first three prequels, I think the story is much more enjoyable. If you start with 1, 2, and 3, you're going to be disappointed.
I think so too. Yeah,
I say just skip 1, 2, and 3 altogether.
If you see if you see 4, 5, and 6, and then 1, 2, and 3, they're bearable. At least 1 and 2 are bearable. I think 3 is good. 1 and 2, especially 2, is bad.
2 is just bad. 3 is okay, except for Hayden Christensen. I cannot watch that boy act.
Yes, he's bad.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, but the transformation into Darth Vader is pretty redeemable. I'll give you that. But.
Oh, I don't think so.
No, it's everything in that third one. You start seeing some of the same characters, you know, the same music starts working its way in there. It ties it together wonderfully.
See, I don't think, we don't have to really get into that. But what you said, Jeremy, about skipping the three movies, how much does that marathon cost?
That I'm not sure.
Because you're just wasting money if you pay for the whole thing and then show up for episode 4.
Yeah, but it would be pretty cool. Like from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. is probably about what the time would be. It would be kind of cool just to say, I'm going to watch 4, 5, 6, 7, boom, 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 right there.
I mean, just seeing them again in theaters, I guess, would be pretty cool.
Yeah.
Funny to me how, like, universally accepted it is to hate 1, 2, and 3. Like, even to, like, you know how, like, media, like, even when a movie is bad, they, like, still promote it or still try to say nice things about it. And you're like, oh, you're just doing that because you're in the media. But like, I've been watching things lately, and media people are not holding back. They're like, oh, Jar Jar Binks. Oh, gross. Oh, if you can sit through Phantom Menace. Oh. And I'm like, wow, you guys are like really hating on this.
That's true.
And like,
it's,
everybody's
like
okay
I'm
with
saying,
it.
It's only enjoyable. Like, if you watch them by themselves, like, and you didn't know the Star Wars universe, you were starting with a newbie, and you're like, hey, you need to watch 1, 2, and 3 first. They're going to like, watch 1 and 2 and not care who any of these people are or what's going to happen because the movies are so terrible. But if you start with 4, 5, and 6 and then go back, then there's a little intrigue about, Senator Palpatine and who's that going to be and who's this, you know. You see the foreshadowing and it makes – you're more into it then.
But most likely if you're going to go to a Star Wars marathon, you've probably seen them all before.
Yeah.
Yeah. Probably true. Before we talk about too much movie stuff, I do want to mention a few things that are going on at the parks, kind of in anticipation of the film. This is stuff that's been going on for almost a month now over at Disneyland and a little bit shorter than that in Disney World. And we've kind of been sitting on it because we knew we would be talking about Star Wars eventually. So I say we get to it now. We've mentioned a few things, but like Hyperspace Mountain is officially open at Disneyland. And having heard the reviews, which have not been like overwhelming, but that it's, you know, as good as they kind of expected, then it makes me wish, you know, we are getting it at Disney World, but Disney World is the park that does not allow any overlays of any kind. So
listener Daniel sent us a Facebook message this week asking if we knew about if it was coming, Hyperspace Mountain was coming to Orlando, and it is not. We're so sorry. Wish it was.
No. But a few things open at Disneyland that are at Disney World, like Star Wars Launch Bay, which is kind of a walkthrough exhibit. It has costumes, helmets, things like that from the film. But it also allows you to meet and greet with both Darth Vader and Chewbacca. Like, you have to get in separate lines, but you can meet both of them, who are both very tall in the pictures I've seen, which makes sense. But still, it's like pretty intimidating. They've got Star Wars Path of the Jedi, which is my favorite. You just go into a theater and watch clips of the films, you know, because you can't do that at home. But it is on the big screen, so I'll give it to them. And of course, there are some special food offerings. Now, I don't know if you guys saw the pictures. I mean, like I said, Season of the Force at Disneyland opened a month ago this week. So it may have been a while, but the food offerings there are much more exotic and almost like tongue-in-cheeky than the ones in Disney World. Like, I remember seeing pictures of the Pastry Menace, which was that... you remember this? It was like... I mean, they're still serving it, but it's an eclair, and on the top, it's got like red icing with little black spiky things that make it look like Darth Maul's mask. Yeah. And it's filled with spicy milk chocolate, which is very curious. So it's like a spicy eclair. They had Darth by chocolate, which was a parfait of...
That's clever.
Yeah, Matt likes that one.
The first one is a little incorrect because the Phantom Menace isn't Darth Maul, but I digress.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
Yeah.
Darth by chocolate is a parfait with layers of dark chocolate ganache, red velvet cake, and chocolate sponge. They've got the First Order specialty burger, which is on a black bun. And over at Disney World, they do have the Royal Guard burger, also on a black bun. So there you go.
I don't know why people would eat that. That started with the Burger King A1 thing.
Right, which they said caused your poop to turn green. But they claim that the one at the Disney parks does not do that. So
that's like the green Shrek ketchup. I don't want to eat that. It's too different.
The Jawa turkey sandwich is served on Bantha blue milk bread. So, you know, they've got the blue milk there on Tatooine. Yeah. Well, the bread is blue. They've also got blue French toast, I think. The Darth tamale is a blue corn tamale topped with scrambled eggs, chorizo, chili sauce, tomato salsa, and cheese. So it's all just like very almost over the top punny with these names.
You could put Darth before anything and it'd be kind of funny. Darth chimichanga.
Yeah.
Darth egg roll.
They do. At Disney World, they have the dark side chicken and waffles, and the little waffles have Darth Vader's face in them.
Oh, yes, I saw those.
But I think it's kind of a tribute to the fans. Like, let's have some fun with it. I don't think any of these things will be in Star Wars Land when it opens. I think that would be probably more authentic. It made me laugh because I was looking at the Disney World menu, which is not nearly as extensive as the Disneyland, because I think Disneyland actually has several different locations that you can get different things at. Okay, so they have the Royal Guard burger, the dark side chicken and waffles, the galactic chicken salad, and then the chili hot dog. That's all there is.
That's the Jar Jar Binks of the menu.
Exactly. It's like, come on, guys. You can't go all the way and then just stop before the very last one.
Yeah. They just ran out of creativity. You're like, I don't care. Chili hot dog.
Exactly. Now, you can't get blue bread there, but you can get a blue milkshake over at Min and Bill's, which is where they used to have that churro milkshake that we talked about before.
Does the flavor change, or is it just like blue food dye?
I assume it's vanilla with blue food dye. Yeah, I didn't hear for sure. Yeah. But some souvenirs you can get, like, the, you know, people are all about their popcorn buckets at Disney World and Disneyland, but they've I don't either, but they've got the Han Solo carbonite popcorn bucket lunchbox thing, a BB-8 sipper, a Chewbacca stein, so lots of gaudy Star Wars merchandise that you can buy and sell on eBay if you are so inclined. But the last couple things that are going on are they've opened up a new Jedi training academy. It's now called Trials of the Temple. They've added a new villain, and I've heard that like the lightsabers are more impressive. And then starting December 18th, which is the day the film comes out, the Symphony in the Stars, a Galactic Spectacular, the fireworks show will show every single night. So that means Epcot, Hollywood Studios, and Magic Kingdom will now all have fireworks every night. So that's kind of impressive that they're going out of their way like that for guests.
Yeah. No, that's exciting.
And behind the Chinese theater now with the that being your backdrop. Ooh, that's nice.
Maybe they'll have a blow up Darth Vader, like they used to have the blow up Mickey.
Oh gosh.
Inflatable Vader kind of.
And children are like, but the last thing that they're doing in honor of all of this is they've debuted the new scene in Star Tours, which I believe you guys have seen. Am I right?
Yes.
Yes.
You want to talk about that?
No. Yeah. Yeah, we will.
Well, I was a little underwhelmed by it, if you want to know the truth, because it's only, like, if you've ever ridden Star Tours before, you know you start off with C-3PO, and he's like, you know, he's not supposed to be flying, and he flies it, and you take off. And then that ride is really segmented into, like, two main scenes. You always end up in one location, and then you have the message that's transferred to you.
Well, the first one changes, too, the first scene.
Yeah, and then you have the second scene is what I'm trying to say. But the only part that's for Episode 7 is the first scene.
The middle scene, you mean? Second scene.
Yeah, second scene.
I'm so confused.
There are three interchangeable scenes.
Yes, yes.
The middle one is the one that is changed right now to...
Oh, okay.
Whatever the name of this planet is.
The first scene and the third scene are normal. They rotate like they've done before.
I'm with you.
That middle scene, I thought it was going to be across the board. All three are going to be new.
Oh, no, no, no.
Themed. So, like... Anyways, you end up going to the new planet, wherever that is. And
Jakku?
It looks like...
Yeah, what?
Sure. I think it's called Jakku, right?
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah,
I couldn't think of the name of it. Yeah, that's it.
And it's like it almost looks like you're in like a trash heap kind of a feel.
Well, it's from the trailer, you know, you've seen like the Star Destroyer that's kind of wrecked, you know, in the sand. That's obviously just fallen out of the sky. You kind of go into the midst of that. Hmm. And like you fly into a wrecked... or a downed Star Destroyer. And there are some, like, Jawas and some other things in there just, like, scrapping the metal, you know, yeah.
Okay. And like you said, that's going to stay for a while so everyone gets a chance to see it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But then you blast out of there and you get the transmission from BB-8.
Yeah.
He sent you a transmission about the rebel spy aboard your liner or whatever it is. And then you go to the Wookiee planet or you go to Tatooine or... Naboo or wherever they send you before. So it's just a small part that they've added. It's not like a complete overhaul.
Speaking of, Jeremy, the second... Remember we wrote it like twice? The second time we wrote it, we had the Naboo scene. Naboo,
yes. And yes.
It was weird because instead of like when you come up out of the water and you go kind of skidding towards the hangar, you go in... And typically, that's the very impressive scene where that fighter's nose breaks through the windshield, and it's really like nice, and the robot's hanging off and falls like into your cockpit up there. But something weird happened, and it's like that didn't happen. It like stopped short, and a robot like fell and tripped and spilled yellow paint all over the windshield. It was like a completely new ending, but it was the exact same scene up until then, so
yeah,
I don't know.
I've had that scene every single time I've ridden it in the new...
The yellow paint?
No, but the nose breaking through your windshield.
Okay. It was very strange. I'm like, what is this? What's happening?
Huh.
Yeah, I would prefer the glass breaking.
Yeah.
But as far as I know, the yellow paint is not like even a stated scene. Like, it's all the same up until then, like underwater, the whole thing, going to the hangar, and then it's like this different thing happens.
It was probably a safety precaution, all that broken glass. They didn't want it to get into your vehicle, you know?
Right.
Okay, but that's all the stuff going on at Disney World. They're obviously taking advantage of the fact that Disney owns Star Wars and this giant movie is about to come out, which is smart.
Yep.
I mean, obviously, people are flocking to Disneyland to get their eyes on all of these things.
Yep.
How much money do you think this movie is going to make this weekend?
That's kind of I wanted to talk about next. Okay, before we talk about something as exciting as Episode 7, I think first we should kind of go back and talk a little bit of history with these other six movies. I was looking at the box office numbers for those first six films, and they all did well. But two of them in particular are current record holders, and that is The Phantom Menace, which has the 20th biggest worldwide gross ever. It made $115 million. No. It made $1 billion, over $1 billion worldwide in its entire run. And then Revenge of the Sith, which is Episode 3, holds the 27th biggest opening weekend. It made $108.4 million in one weekend. Which Jurassic World now holds the record with, I think, $208 million in one weekend.
Yep.
Wow. I have no doubt that Force Awakens is going to beat that. There's no doubt.
People have estimated at the highest, like I think I saw $220 million, which really doesn't beat Jurassic World by all that much.
Mm-mm.
But I tend to agree. that it'll be
I think, but think about, I mean, probably every theater, not every theater, but most theaters are probably not showing any other film on Friday night or Thursday than Star Wars. I mean, if I was a theater owner and I had 20 screens and the demand was there, I would sell out as many screens as possible, all 20 if needed, to fill the demand for Force Awakens.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, don't forget Alvin and the Chipmunks is coming out. So,
but what I'm saying is, I'm sure that Jurassic World did not have that kind of hype to
probably
it.
True. Yeah. And with something that's been hiding spoilers for so long, people are going to want to see it as soon as they can so as not to be spoiled. I think it's going to be pretty big. Pre-sales for Star Wars, I read this quote, have reached levels that far outpace blockbusters such as The Hunger Games and The Avengers. Ticketing websites such as Fandango have not released specific numbers on pre-sales, but they have stated that they far exceed previous record holders. Some analysts estimate it has made $100 million already in pre-sales. I assume that goes towards the opening weekend number, surely, right?
You would think.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Now, like UK and China and Russia, they have released pre-sale numbers, and they've said it's just broken all the records. UK said it's racked up advanced ticket sales of more than $500,000 at one cinema chain alone, which is Odeon.
Wow.
And it is double the company's previous record, which was held by Spectre, which just came out in October. And it's already doubled that record, so it's just insane.
Interesting. Yeah. This is going to be big. We're going to be seeing history, folks, so pay attention this weekend.
I remember earlier this year on our Twitter saying that this is going to be one of the biggest years ever because you've got, for Disney alone, because you've got Avengers, the sequel, which I thought would be the biggest moneymaker before Star Wars. I did not see Jurassic World coming.
Yeah.
But, you know, with Avengers 2 and then Star Wars Episode 7. Yeah, Tomorrowland.
The Good Dinosaur.
But, I mean, for real, Inside Out did very well in the theaters.
Oh, yeah.
Cinderella did very well. Disney has knocked out of the park. But they were saying that the biggest year ever at the movies, I think, was 2013. And it made $10.9 billion. And they're saying we're right at about $10 billion right now, which means Star Wars, mostly Star Wars, and technically the other films that come out in the next few weeks, but mostly Star Wars, have to make $1 billion for 2015 to be the biggest year ever at the domestic box office. That's domestic, $11 billion in 2015.
What came out in 2013 that was so big?
That's a good question. Hunger Games?
One of the Avengers films? Was that the first one that came out?
I think that was 2012.
I think it was too, yeah. So Hunger Games, for sure, one of them came out that year.
Hobbit come out that year?
Probably.
One of the Hobbits?
Probably. That's a good question. But yeah, it made $10.9 billion. And they're saying in order to hit $11 billion, they'll have to do nearly $1 billion worth of business
Frozen.
In 2.5 weeks. Oh, that's true.
But Frozen. That really didn't hit its stride till 2014, I don't think, right?
Well, it came out January-ish. Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hold on, I'm looking it up. I'm Googling.
Some analysts are saying that Star Wars will be the first movie to make $100 million in one day. That would be so much money.
Yeah.
Top 10 movies of 2013, Hunger Games: Catching Fire, Iron Man 3, Frozen, Despicable Me 2, Man of Steel, Gravity, Monsters University, The Hobbit, Desolation of Smaug, Fast and Furious 6, Oz the Great and Powerful, Star Trek, Into the Darkness, Thor, Dark World.
Okay. Man, a lot of those were Disney properties.
Yeah. And lest we forget, The Smurfs 2.
Ah, yes, yes. So the things I'm particularly looking at are, will 2015 be the biggest year? I'm also wondering if it'll beat... I looked at three current records and wondering if it's going to beat these. Opening day is held by Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2. It made $91 million in its opening day. So if analysts right and Star Wars makes $100 million, then it'll beat that.
Yep.
I think it'll beat it, no problem.
Maybe so. Opening weekend, like I said, Jurassic World made $208 million domestically in its opening weekend. We'll see. And do you guys know the biggest domestic gross... in its entire run, what made the most money?
Avatar?
Yep. $760 million. So we'll see if Star Wars beat... That's a lot of money, y'all.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see. But those are some of the things I'm looking at particularly to see if how well it will do. So,
what if it sucks?
It's still going to make money.
It's still going to make money.
Yeah, it's kind of like, who cares?
I just found it so interesting that Revenge of the Sith has the biggest opening weekend ever because after 1 and 2 got just blasted.
But I'm telling you, people probably were thinking, and I was not into Star Wars at the time Revenge of the Sith was opening, so I don't know for sure. But what I'm probably thinking is people were thinking this movie is the bridge into episode 4.
Oh, yeah.
It certainly drew a lot. People knew Darth Vader was going to show up.
Yeah.
So and everything was going to tie together.
Yeah, they wanted to see that transition. You know, even though the first two sucked, it was like, well, I kind of want to see that transition into episode 4.
That makes sense, because I was looking at Hunger Games numbers and how part 2, which just was released, is the worst one yet as far as money-making goes. And I assumed it's because of, like, you know, poor reviews or whatever. But that makes sense. It's not connecting you to any upcoming trilogy or anything, so.
Yeah, and also there's a new comic out that I just discovered from a guy at work that is Darth Vader's story between episode 3 and episode 4. So if you're interested even more, I think it just released on trade, so you can get the whole series.
Yeah, the movies do kind of jet forward a whole lot there, don't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's kind of like what happens to Darth Vader between that time. I think it'd be interesting.
Yeah, well, I mean, even episode 7 takes place years after episode 6.
Yeah, what are you most hoping to see in episode 7? Like, what is your curiosity piqued about, like, as far as what character's been up to?
My curiosity is piqued about... I don't think there's any plot or narrative that I'm so much looking forward to seeing. I mean, I'm not really even excited about, like, Han and Chewie and all them being back. That's a great thing. But the new villains, you know, Kylo Ren, I think is his name, mm-hmm. and how that all ties in. Really just how the story, what in the world, how has the story continued? Where's the Galactic Empire? How have they made it back to power, you know? And seeing some of the stills of, you know, all the stormtroopers lined up, and they're very, like, I think they're conscientiously tapping, like, Third Reich Nazi imagery with all the soldiers lined up and the banners and the big podium for the speaker and all that stuff. That's cool. So we'll see.
Yeah, as far as plot goes, I've tried to not expect anything at all because I want to let them surprise me with the story and not come out saying, oh, I wish they had addressed this. So I'm really trying not to think about that. Mostly I'm thinking about John Williams' music, which is so nerdy to say. But like, I'm really excited to see some of the themes he comes out with, because still some of my favorite themes he introduced. In episode 1, he introduced Duel of the Fates, which is fantastic.
And yeah.
One of my favorite scores ever is Across the Stars, and that's the love theme between Anakin and...
Yes! I was just going to say that. That's like the redeeming quality of episode 2.
Exactly. He released it in episode 2. And to think he can still come out with great themes like that so late in the series.
That version that it goes into, my favorite part of any Star Wars film, like musically speaking, is the end. You know, how it always builds to a big climactic and then it's like, dum ba dum ba da 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 da, and it goes into the main theme. I love that. And that episode 2, the score for that is that last theme as they're getting married, you know. Movie's terrible, you know, but the music there at the end, and then it goes right into the main theme. That's one of my favorite parts in any of the scores, all of them.
Oh, y'all, I'm going to cry. I'm going to cry when that music starts playing.
I'm really excited to see the love story of Han and Leia continue and find out what's
going on. I bet you are.
I'm not surprised by this.
I bet that's what you are excited about.
I got a little emotional.
I want to know how Princess Leia has done the Weight Watchers.
Yeah. What does Slim Fast look like in a galaxy far, far away?
Blue milk.
Oh.
What it is. It's like a little shake.
No, but in the, you know, when they first released the trailer and there's that picture or that really quick scene of Leia with like her head on Han's chest, like embracing him. And all I could think about was, I love you, I know. And I just got very emotional about it. So I'm really excited.
I bet they're broken up.
Maybe they're having problems.
I bet
that's not even funny.
And that's why he's going home with Chewie. Like, hey, we're home. We're away from that woman.
But have you seen... Have you seen Carrie Fisher lately, though? Like, God love her, but she has had some horrible surgery, plastic surgery. And so she talks kind of like dish now, you know.
She always did, though.
Yeah, I don't
think... Yeah, but it's really pronounced now. I saw her on Ellen the other day, and I was like, I don't know if I can listen to Princess Leia talk like dish.
You know, one of my favorite Carrie Fisher movies is Blues Brothers. I love her character because you're used to her being Princess Leia, and then she's got a machine gun yelling out profanities. Oh, my.
Well, once we start talking about Blues Brothers, we know we've gone off topic. Anyway, okay, so we've talked about box office and stuff. What other articles or things have caught your eye lately that get you hyped up?
Well, I don't know about hyped up, but I thought it was interesting going back to kind of security measures that have been put out there about how a lot of theaters are putting kind of they're sizzling out the – not sizzling – snuffing out the nerdgasm that's going on by not letting people dress up and wear fun costumes and those kind of things. Clearly out of safety concerns, especially what was that a couple years ago? They had the theater shooting in Colorado.
Batman.
Yeah, Dark Knight Returns. Or Rises, excuse me. Dark Knight Rises. I'm in
what did
Star
you
Wars.
Say?
I said Dark Knight Returns. I'm in Star Wars mode. The Jedi, Return of the Jedi. Anyway. Continue.
So, like, obviously it's a safety thing, which, you know, in this day and age, as we mentioned earlier in the show, it's unfortunate, but you have to do it. But there's no face paint allowed, no masks, no costumes, no lightsabers, no weapons of any type. And, you know, that's part of the culture of being a nerd, in a sense. You know, you dress up for Comic-Con, you dress up for, you know, theater premieres and stuff. So it kind of sucks.
Like, but why even go anymore, you know?
Yeah.
I remember when I saw Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows, there was a kid dressed up all in gold and someone yelled like, catch the snitch. And that kid just took off across the front of the room and someone was chasing him holding a broom. It was the greatest thing.
Much.
Like, it was stupid, but it was funny.
So stupid, but so fun. There was a guy in high school and his family was huge nerds, and I was not there to see this, but I wish I would have been. But they all went to the Lord of the Rings premiere. I think it was for Two Towers, and they dressed as elves. And their dad was fluent in the elvish language.
No.
And before the movie started, he stood up and gave a speech in elvish, basically
That's
just
great.
Welcoming everyone and telling them how excited he was for
that.
The film.
Reminds me of an episode of Frasier. Where he thinks he's speaking in Klingon. No, he thinks he's speaking Hebrew for his son's bar mitzvah, but he's actually speaking Klingon, which is Star Trek, not Star Wars, I understand. But,
right, right.
Yeah.
Wow. So no costumes. Sorry, guys.
No costumes. So, well, you know, there's always Comic-Con, I guess.
You were going to wear one, weren't you?
Absolutely.
Derek is the king of costumes.
No, I mean you, Jeremy.
I hate costumes.
I wasn't going to wear one, no, but if I was with a group of people that wanted to wear them, I totally would.
You'd be one to wear, like, try to wear, like, a clever costume, like, dress up like a shopping mall and say you're Darth Maul.
Wait, did you say clever?
Yeah.
No, I would, if I had to dress up, I would want to be Yoda, or I would want to be a young Luke Skywalker. I think I could, or I'm not cool enough to be Hans, I think, but I could
be. If you did like a mashup between Darth Vader and like Vader, the pro wrestler from the 90s. Darth Vader.
That would be awesome.
Yeah, that would be.
I would want to be Han with the boots up to the knees. He's got the nice utility belt across his waist. Just looks cool, you know? That's what I would do.
I don't think you can pull it off, no offense.
How dare you?
I think you're more like a C-3PO.
How does that even work?
Matt, who would you be? Jabba?
Oh, Waka Waka. No. I'm Lando Calrissian.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's frowned upon in this day and age.
Yeah.
That's true. People don't know what race I am on this show. They can't tell by my voice.
I am the king of the mashup costumes, though. A couple years ago, I went to Mickey's Very Merry, and I think I had the best costume ever. I wore scrubs, and then I wore a wig.
I assume this was at the Halloween party and not Very Merry.
Yeah, I meant Halloween okay. party.
I wore scrubs.
I wore a braided wig, like two braids on the side, dark wig. I wore red shoes, and I carried a basket with a little dog. And do you know what I was?
Dr. Yes. Oz.
I was Dr. Oz.
I said that.
I got so many compliments that night. It was great.
Matt, do you have anything?
Star Wars is timeless. And Star Wars is quintessentially classic.
Mm-hmm.
And Derek, you had shared a few articles with us, and one was some reviews that Rotten Tomatoes had compiled from various magazines and entertainment venues back in 1977.
Yeah.
When A New Hope premiered. And one of the ones that I thought, of all the ones that were there, there's only one that was quote-unquote rotten. And I think it generally got good reviews and reception when it opened. This is from Robert Hatch, who wrote for The Nation on May 25th, 1977. And I think his review captures the whole Star Wars mentality perfectly. He says, "All in all, it is an outrageously successful, what will be called classic compilation of nonsense, largely derived, but thoroughly reconditioned." Now, that's the first part. And it sounds harsh, but it's not. It's favorable. But I think that that's a pretty apt description of the Star Wars whole thing. You know it's nonsensical. You know it's outlandish, outrageous, what he calls a compilation of nonsense, but it's fun. And he goes on to say, "I doubt that anyone will ever match it, though the imitations must already be on the drawing boards."
Mm.
And this was a favorable review, but he captures it. It's outrageous. It's nonsensical. It's ridiculous. And if you're like my wife, that makes it unviewable. it's not really a fantasy or whimsy so much. It's just good fictional storytelling, you know, with a compelling story, at least in those first six movies. And he's right, you know, it will never be matched.
The original was actually nominated for Best Picture at the Oscars.
It's good.
So I would say the reviews are pretty favorable overall.
And I think Star Wars, it has those, like, really when you look at all stories across the board and all films and all books, there's only really like 8 main plots, you know, like plot lines across the board. And Star Wars really does a great job of encompassing a lot of those into one. Mm-hmm. In a sense of, you have the good versus evil, you have the family strife, you have the, you know, all those kind of different elements that are just very seamlessly blended to make one good story. It's almost like a modern Odyssey, in a sense.
Well, that's exactly what it is. And that's good. That's a good analogy, because it's, well, for Luke Skywalker, I guess it is Odyssey of sorts, but it's more like almost, this is really super nerdy, I know, but some people will enjoy it. You know, Dante, the Divine Comedy, you know, the three parts, the Inferno and Purgatorio and Paradiso. It's really that whole storyline for Darth Vader, for Anakin Skywalker. And that's what I'm not nervous about, because I'm sure the seventh film will be fantastic, but really, when you watch 4, 5, and 6 and go back and watch 1, 2, and 3, it dawns on you during maybe the second or third episode, Revenge of the Sith, certainly, that whole thing, the whole storyline of the first 6 films is about Anakin and his redemption, basically. You know, he falls into whatever and then becomes evil, and then at the end he's redeemed. So I don't know where they're going to go in the seventh film. I guess his legacy lives on through this other villain that's going to be there, but really it was all about Anakin in the first place, and I think that's what makes it so endearing to people.
Yeah, he is the main character really of the whole franchise.
Yeah,
it's not Luke or
so
Han
far.
Or Leia. So far, we'll see in this new one.
Well, as we wrap things up, I want to know how early you guys are getting to the theater. Have you thought about it? Well, Jeremy, I guess for you it's a different story, maybe. But I'm just thinking, I want to get seats that aren't in the front row.
Yeah.
And I want to be with the people I'm going with. And I noticed that, I don't know if you guys saw the news about the people who are seeing it in LA, I think at the Chinese theater, who lined up like a week before the movie was released. They stayed out there in the rain. They never left. They had tents set up.
They don't have jobs.
Girlfriends.
Well, the exciting news for them this week was when the world premiere happened Monday night, J.J. Abrams and others came out and said, You don't have to wait till Friday. You guys can come in and watch it right now with us. So that's pretty awesome.
I bet there was a lot of changing of pants necessary.
Probably so. Obviously, I'm not lined up already, but I am starting to think about, well, maybe I should get there a couple hours early. I don't even know.
I saw, what was it, Harry Potter 7, Episode 1, with you, right? In theaters mm-hmm. at midnight, and we got stuck in the front row.
Do you
remember that?
And we were there like 45 minutes early.
Yeah. So maybe a little early, you know, to make ensure you don't have to sit in the very front row.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm excited to come back next week and to see how we all enjoyed it, what our experiences were like, and to see how it fared across the world. So stay tuned for that.
Mm-hmm. It'll be an interesting thing, because if it is a Phantom Menace, it's going to be like, I mean, I wouldn't want to be J.J. Abrams right now, good or bad,
because
I'm sure the stress has got to be through the roof.
I can't even imagine.
You're holding people's childhood. There's high expectation. They've already been disappointed once, you know, so.
Yep. Good luck.
If you're George Lucas, though, you're feeling pretty good, because you're like, you know, if they hate it, they hate it. If they like it, I make more money.
He's probably praying that they hate it, just so he's not the only Star Wars person universally hated because of what he did to the original
franchise.
And
he kind of feels vindicated in a way. Exactly. Like, it doesn't matter what we make, you people hate it.
That's probably what he's like now, too.
Yeah, as he's like using $100 bills to like wipe his rear end.
Roll joints
and sniff coke off of hookers dressed like Leia.
Oh my word.
We
really love George Lucas, think the most of him.
Fast, very quickly to a different place.
Okay, before I let our listeners go, I want to get to some emails that we've been sitting on for a few weeks, but we've been hearing from some of our listeners lately. I wanted to share some of these with you guys. The first one is from Kelly. She says, "Hi, guys. I'm in the process of listening to the older podcast, and in number 40, you talked about the good, bad, and ugly for cast member uniforms / costumes. Being a former cast member myself, I would like to throw my hat in the ring for the umpire uniforms that I had to wear at Casey's." I think she means in the ugly category.
Yeah.
"Not only did you get to enjoy the polyester baseball tops and bottoms, but we also had to put on the umpire vest and a baseball hat. I did the college program, so I was only there in the spring. I can't imagine how hot these are during the summer. Thanks for the entertainment. Love listening to you guys, Kelly."
Those are very interesting costumes, because they're very, like, you talk about that mid-century, you know, or turn of the century rather, theming on Main Street. And I guess these kind of fit into that, but they do seem kind of strange.
Yeah.
Just speaking of story, why would the umpires be serving you food?
That's a good question.
I mean, still in like full garb. It's like maybe it's just like just after the game, you know, they've come and opened up this little corner.
There you go.
Hot dog stand.
Yeah, but have you ever seen like baseball players at the end of the game? I don't want them touching food.
No. Let alone my corn nuggets.
Oh my gosh. Next, we hear from Kevin. He says, "Love the latest episode." I'm so sorry. I don't know when he sent this. So, one of our recent episodes he loved.
Let's face it, he loves them all. Let's not mince words.
Heard about you guys on Nerdist. I don't think we said that. Chris Hardwick plugged our show on the Nerdist podcast. Anyway, he heard about us on Nerdist. He says, "Glad I tuned in. My wife and I are huge Disney fans, but only make it down there or over to California about once a year if we're lucky. I heard you mention the Muppet Family Christmas special," that was me, "on your latest episode, and in case you hadn't found it, it's readily available on YouTube." There you go.
Good to know.
There is also a VHS you can find on eBay, but they cut out some songs in it due to copyright rules. You still get the gist of the show, but it's got some weird cuts. Oh, well, that's sad. "Of all the Muppet Christmas stuff out there, it's the tops as far as I'm concerned. Keep up the good work. Sincerely, Kevin." I agree. Muppet Family Christmas is super good, and I wish I could go back and watch it, but... Oh, well, I can on YouTube.
Is John Denver in this Muppet Family Christmas?
I don't know.
Is there a running gag where, like, whenever somebody walks through the door, they slip on ice?
Yes.
Okay, because somebody put on, I think it was the Nerdist actually, this week, somebody made a supercut of all the scenes of people slipping on the ice.
Yes, and it was like a Family Christmas.
Okay, I have to watch it now because I watched the supercut and I thought it was kind of funny.
Yeah, there you go. It's
like it was
YouTube.
An ongoing gag. Like every time somebody walked in the door, it was like whoop, and they slipped and fell.
Thanks, Kevin. Now I can watch it on YouTube. Okay, our last one is from Maggie. She had reached out to us on Facebook a while back. I don't know if you remember this. And she said, she was talking to Matt about his review of Night of Joy and said, you're yes, absolutely right.
This is the cast member, right?
Yeah, she's the cast
member. Yeah, and I told her share fun stories.
Exactly. Well, she followed through and she let us know some of her fun stories working in Magic Kingdom. She says, hey boys, I've recently binged all of your episodes as I've been homesick for Walt Disney World recently. Oh, wow. I'm so sorry that you had to binge all of our episodes. I can't imagine what that must be like.
That sounds like a great way to spend a week.
I don't know. I was last there in March and miss it terribly. On your Night of Joy episode, you questioned whether or not the cast members were as miserable as you were. I was a Main Street cast member in 2012 for Night of Joy, and yes, we were probably more miserable than you. I am not a religious person, so contemporary Christian music holds zero draw for me. On top of that, the park is hot and packed. I worked the main stage, so I mostly just kept people from climbing on trees, stools, and trash cans, but my fellow cast members caught teenagers, quote, unquote, getting familiar in the in the oddest of places, including inside the wishing well.
Oh, is that like, is that a euphemism?
A euphemism. Anyway.
Is that what I said?
You said
did I say it wrong?
Yeah, but we know you. We know what you meant. We know you really. You know the real
we
word.
Know you, and we know what you mean.
Anyway, we had security guards stationed at the bathrooms so that the gender separations were followed. Apparently, bathrooms are extremely romantic.
Yeah, evangelicals want their gender distinctions.
Yeah, that's true. Personally, I had an okay Night of Joy, aside from a woman telling me that, quote, Jesus would save me when I accepted into my heart, end quote, when I didn't bow my head to pray during one of the sets, which I understand she probably meant very sincerely and honestly, but it just felt like a condemnation of my lack of religion. Other than that, and some excitement when a man fainted from the heat and the other guests were too busy singing and praying over him to let the paramedics through... It was a relatively...
That wasn't the heat, honey. That was the Holy Ghost.
That's right.
And went out. They were probably singing Oceans or something.
It was a relatively calm event. Also, Christian hip-hop is a thing. Who knew?
We know.
Yeah, unfortunately, we know all too well. I was on the college program in 2012 as everyone's favorite cast member, Parade Audience Control. Yikes. Mm. I get secretly very excited when anyone complains about the cast members telling you to move through the walkway. We are essentially the only cast members encouraged and required to say no more than yes because safety is a huge issue. Because of giant vehicles with very low visibility, safety rules are extremely important during parades. If we seem stressed, it's because a Brazilian tour group could come and sit in the middle of Main Street minutes before the parade, and we're the ones on the lookout to stop them. And when you're trying to move 30,000 guests down Main Street without killing each other, loud voices and magic killing rules and backstage bypasses are required. We know we kill the magic on an especially crazy night when we've been screamed at in Portuguese, rained on, and told we're destroying children's dreams. We have very little worry about the magic.
Oh, well, look. I feel like she's directing all this at me because I'm always complaining about the backstage exits, the loud cast members.
And did you look. Speak in Portuguese?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, you should talk about... No, I don't speak in Portuguese.
What was that?
I don't know. It sounds like Russian
that
to
was
me.
Klingon.
So, yeah. I feel for you, Maggie. I'm not downing the cast members' responsibilities. I understand. It's just something... I'm not quite used to it, the Magic Kingdom yet.
She does say, sometimes the calm and polite guests get the brunt of our efficient, magicless tone, and that sucks.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm one of those.
Yeah. Anyways, being a cast member with a slightly combative job means that I am full of crazy stories, but this email is getting crazy long as it is, so I'll just let you go for now. I can talk for ages about doing the college program and life as a cast member, as well as crazy guest interactions that you wouldn't believe. Thanks for reading. Love the podcast, Maggie. P.S. You may have heard already. Oh, this is something Jeremy asked a few weeks ago. You may have heard already, but the jokes were added to the Jungle Cruise a couple of years after the ride opened because Walt overheard guests saying they had ridden the serious ride before and that they didn't need to do it again. Walt thought silly jokes would make it more repeatable.
Oh, good to know. Thank you, Maggie. That's interesting.
So those are just some of our listeners who reached out. We've had a few people also say very complimentary things, and I've responded to them. But we always love hearing from listeners. So if you have any questions or comments or complaints or whatever you want to send our way, you can send those to comments@madchatters.net. Thanks for listening. I think I'll go ahead and sign us off here and say thank you so much for tuning into another episode of the podcast. Go check us out on Twitter. Let us know your add a word ruin an attraction hashtags, or just say hey, and we will see you back here next week.
Take a little time to find the magic in every day and live long and prosper. Am I doing it wrong?